So, you know, I've worked on cigarette taxes and working on sugar sweetened beverage and all the good stuff and smoke free, but not today. Today I'm talking about community clinical linkages, which I think is part of the focus is really bringing communities together. But I wouldn't feel so bad about not knowing GOTV, because when I went to work for the Lung Association, I didn't know how to spell TB. So I went, polite laughter, tip your waiter, I'm here till Thursday. So I'm Janet Williams. Thank you, Katie. I'm Janet Williams. I'm Senior Program Manager with the American Medical Association, and I'm a community organizer. I was with the Lung Association for 13 years in charge of government relations. I worked for the County Health Department. I went to the AMA and a Robert Wood Johnson grant, so I think I've touched everything that everybody's done in this room because of that. But now the AMA, today I'm going to talk about preventing diabetes with the establishment of a health system policy for screening and referral to a community-based program. So I guess that's why they put me here, because I use the word policy. But so we'll see. I have nothing to disclose, and I'd like to acknowledge my team of Christopher Holliday and Vanessa Salcido, who aren't here today, but my other co-worker, Katie Hennigan, is. So thank you, Katie, for supporting me and being our timekeeper. So just some of the learning objectives. We're going to talk about the AMA's screening, pre-diabetes screening and referral initiative, compare some of these referral models, and discuss the benefits of screening for pre-diabetes. So I think as we sit here talking about sugar-sweetened beverage tax, and so I'm really talking about diabetes prevention and really getting physicians involved in changing their clinical practice and advocating for prevention. And then once we certainly mobilize them around a clinical change, then we can always get them involved in policies such as SSB, because we know physicians are some of your best voices, especially to counter an idiot from Coke. So our efforts to prevent diabetes. At this point, I will say that I have been given the go-ahead to do some SSB work, looking at SSB-free hospitals. So hopefully I'll be talking about that next year. But now I'm talking about what can happen for treating people and preventing diabetes in an office setting using a community clinical linkage. So the AMA is really looking to increase screening for pre-diabetes. Physicians typically just screen for diabetes, and raise participation in the evidence-based diabetes prevention program. And our approach is certainly engaging with physicians and their care teams, linking clinical practices to a community resource, because physicians aren't trained, nor do they have the time to really talk about lifestyle intervention, and that's one of the things that works. It's environmental policy as well as what happens through healthcare. So part of our approach is also developing and testing relevant tools to help physicians and care teams do this work, and to advocate for inclusion for make it a covered benefit, so that we can remove all the barriers to physicians to do this work and the barriers for patients to participate. So the impact on clinical practice, and I'll go through this briefly because I do have a chart, but I don't really understand it. The doctors that I work with, as I said, I'm not a physician, I'm a community organizer, so but I really do get involved in what happens in making these linkages. So it's estimated that 1 in 3 patients in an average primary care practice has prediabetes. And 75% of all primary care office visits are for treating a chronic disease. And older adults have at least more than one chronic disease. And 2/3 of all healthcare costs are spent on treating chronic disease. So there really is a benefit to having physicians think about prevention, but as you can see from the growth, if this clinical practice continues to grow and they see, you know, almost 23,000 cases of diabetes, and treating somebody with diabetes is a long, intensive process, and it costs our healthcare system anywhere from $5,000 to $8,000 a year, we really need to see really working to that this is a serious medical condition that can have a significant impact on a practice. So if we can keep patients or delay them from getting diabetes in the first place, physicians are going to be left to do some work. And not that people with diabetes don't need care, but primary care is overburdened, and we have a lack of primary care physicians. So if we can remove the burden of treating diabetes by preventing it, we certainly think that that's a benefit. So, you know, just sort of by the numbers, 29 million have diabetes, but another 86 million have prediabetes, and 90% of them don't even know they have it. And the majority of physicians aren't testing for it. So, so without an intervention, 3 to 5% of these people with prediabetes will progress to diabetes every year. Once again, we're talking about not only that burden to the practice, but certainly the burden to family and societies. And so we think that looking at prediabetes and looking at the iceberg, that we think this is a wake-up call, not only for patients and their families, but for physicians as well. That this is a serious illness and that has health consequences. And let's be clear that if a patient has prediabetes, they're already seeing some type of health consequence. So it's not just, well, I have prediabetes and I'm at risk for getting diabetes and that's the really bad thing. Their heart is already affected when they have prediabetes. In fact, if they have prediabetes, they probably have hypertension already. And it puts them, even having prediabetes, puts them at greater risk for stroke and heart attacks, not to mention diabetes. So the key challenges, certainly to the AMA and certainly the community partners that we work with, is awareness. That if you got 90% of patients don't know they have it, and the majority of doctors aren't really talking about prediabetes, we've got an awareness problem. And they're not aware that the program is in their community. Affordability. We have limited coverage, and mostly part of a wellness program at a business. So that's really something that we've got to look at. I mean, the program is only $420 a year. And like we used to say with tobacco, that's when you look at what's going to cost you to get diabetes, that's not a bad investment in your health. But it's still $429. And even the YMCA, they do have a sliding scale. It really should be covered just like smoking cessation and any other prevention intervention. Also, as I said, availability. There is over 500 in-person diabetes prevention programs, but we definitely need more providers, and we are getting more into the virtual arena. So that certainly opens it up, but not every member of a segment of society who has prediabetes finds a comfortable way to address lifestyle. So, and physician buy-in. I mean, they think it's another burden. It's one more thing for them to do. They're already required to do a lot because of the Affordable Care Act, which we know is celebrating 5 years. Happy birthday. So we really had to figure out how can we help them link to an evidence-based program and show them that we're going to relieve some of their burden. So the AMA partnered with CDC to develop this framework for developing a scalable models to address diabetes prevention in clinical practice. And I think we've covered certainly some of this from awareness, really putting programs within financial reach, ensuring that enough programs are available to meet the needs of the growing population, screening and referral, really finding where's that sweet spot in those tools that are not going to seem like another burden, that we can make it really simple and easy. I think I'm almost there, but we're still testing all of our tools. And then enrollment. CDC really just sees success as 4 sessions. It's a 16-week program. 16 weekly sessions, and then it goes to 8 core monthly sessions. 9 is considered a completer, but we know the longer you go, it's the dose response, the more successful. And actually, I'll talk a little bit about the program briefly. Is everybody here familiar with the Diabetes Prevention Program and the National? Great. For those of you who aren't, so the Diabetes Prevention Program, which now CDC calls the National Diabetes Prevention Program, was based on this study that was done almost 15 years ago, and it was done in an office setting, and it looked at comparing lifestyle, an intensive lifestyle intervention counseling, so the same 16 weeks, but it was one-on-one by somebody in the physician's office, so really expensive. I think it was about $2,000 was what they said the cost of that intervention was. But they looked at it compared to metformin, which is actually a diabetes drug, and they looked at placebo, and it outperformed in terms of decreasing the weight loss and delaying the onset of diabetes in adults under 60 by 58% and 71% in older adults. They actually saw a greater benefit in older adults. So, and actually just another 15-year follow-up, this cohort is still being studied. So, but as I said, it was very expensive. So in the real world, it's now being brought out by a community. And so there's about 48 different studies that really look how can you get the same results in the community using an in-person support group type of intervention. The YMCA is probably the largest provider of the in-person diabetes prevention program. They've been doing it, I want to say, for over 6 years. We now have web-based coaching. As I said, we have virtual. Most of them are based in California. No surprise there. There's now smartphone apps. There's combo programs where you can get some text messages. There's people who are running the program as like a conference call. So there's really some promising models here, and certainly it's now more affordable than giving that one-on-one. But it really has to be an intensive. So the key here, because there was a new guideline that just came out, and it talks about lifestyle intervention program coupled with screening for diabetes, but it's very specific. It has to be intensive, multi-session counseling. So not just the doctor and nurse practitioner saying, or sending you to a nutritionist. So it's very specific, and it's really pointing to the diabetes prevention program. And just real briefly, what are the benefits of the National Diabetes Prevention Program? Not only the reduction in diabetes, which I talked about, the reduction in stroke and heart attacks, but as I said, most people with pre-diabetes probably have a cholesterol issue, or a lipid disease, and hypertension. This has a 25% reduction in medications. People really feel good about themselves when they can take less meds. It's not better living through chemicals. So I think people really get excited about the prevention program. But here's the other thing that's the benefit, which is that a reduction in absenteeism, missed work days. So there's a lot of benefits to the diabetes prevention program, and how do we get that across to doctors. So for the past 3 years, we actually partnered with the YMCA. They had a grant from CMMI, so it paid for the program for older adults, so we could remove that barrier, because physicians are concerned about cost to their patients, especially doctors we work with in rural health systems or lower income communities and minority communities of low income as well. So we worked with 17 locations in the YMCA that were part of the program to really look at what kind of tools did they need, from anything from the referral form that gets put into the EMR. We have physician education programs, CMEs. We have buttons, ask me about pre-diabetes, so that everybody in the office could be engaged, really creating visual cues. And I think we know a lot when we work on policy campaigns. It's all about creating an environment that is supportive of whatever policy we're working on, and ours is getting doctors and their care teams to screen for prediabetes, which is a reversible condition. Sell that to a patient, they're thrilled. Rather than telling them you have a little bit of sugar, we're just going to watch it. Now go home and don't eat so much. So we created posters. So this toolkit really helped clinical practices. So how do we build that community clinical linkage? So we did work with the Y on their locations and really had the Y come in and make grand rounds and in-services. We are educating our physicians about the credibility of the program with the lifestyle coaches, and then saying, we understand your burden, we understand your practice, we speak your language. So there's two ways to screen that a clinical practice can screen. One is the point of care, which is really intensive, right? I mean, do you want to go to your physician? You've got bronchitis that won't go away. You want to get back to work. You've got a problem with your asthma, or you cut yourself, and they're trying to treat you, and then they go, and by the way, Robin, you've got prediabetes. So let's talk a little bit about that. Really, doc, I'm glad you're taking an interest in my health, but it's a more burden to the practice. So now they're really going to be upset with the AMA and the clinical part and the community partner. So we really think this is done best in a wellness visit. So this is what we learned, right, is the retrospective. Using the electronic medical record. We're moving fast and furious. I think there's actually a program next door on health IT. But we really found that this was the most efficient for a practice. It really doesn't involve the physician too much, other than you query your list for whatever for the criteria for prediabetes. And we worked with several practices. Christiana Care spoke today, where they would send a letter to the patient saying, here's your report card, you have prediabetes. Good news, there's a free program for you at the Y, and we're going to have them call you. That was really important to us, to make sure that the YMCA and any DPP provider can call the patient. Because we know from those of us who work on smoking cessation, if I tell you to call the quit line, even if I'm your physician, you're not going to do it. If I tell you to do it twice, you're not going to do it. Since we developed the fax referral form to the quit line, where the quit line calls the smoker who wants to quit, you get much more buy-in. So that's one area that we've really been working on. So, the benefits of the retrospective is it's more inclusive, really, and there's a reduced burden. But point of care is more immediate and it's high touch. Some practices have actually done a combination where they flagged the record So what are the lessons that we learned? Integrating into the workflow is what's going to make it most successful and get physician and buy-in. Care coordinators or equivalent staff can help offload for physicians. If they're working with community health workers or patient navigators, a physician does not have to do this work. Even though I'm the AMA, they don't have to do it. Don't tell my bosses. When possible, use your EMR or you know, use the electronic medical record. Patient-centered medical home is a buzzword. This fits right in with that. Meaningful use, if you're working with health system, that's a buzzword. So these really help with that. And patients want to hear about the risk. I know with tobacco, we said, well, you know, you don't use scare tactics. And our focus groups, they want you to tell them that they're going to lose a foot, that what are the consequences. And stroke and heart attack are first and foremost before kidney disease and blindness. So this is one of the practices. This is a real Dr. Reed. This is not a real patient. But Dr. Reed came to me. He read an article that we had, and he said, I want to get more involved in this. And he's now our champion. And it does take a champion. It's like anything. You have champions in the legislature. You need champions in your health systems. He's a champion in the community. And this is Park Nicollet in Minnesota. They referred 2,500 patients, and over, I think, 60% of them converted to enroll in the program. So I will run this quickly. I know I'll go over time.
Working with community partnerships, that is something unique that we don't do every day. Most times we think we have to shoulder all of the work and the resources around taking care of our patients and making sure that they stay healthy. But this partnership with the community and having that resource outside of our four walls really does expand our care team. We started out with creating a report in our electronic records system to pull patients based on pre-diabetes criteria to identify that list of patients for each clinician at our pilot site in Brookdale. From there, each clinician looked through their panel of patients to identify any possible exclusions of patients that might have a barrier to participating in a pre-diabetes program. And then we sent letters that are actually electronically built into our system to all of those patients. And from there, we have had a great response of 49% of patients who've enrolled in the diabetes prevention program, which means improved lives and improved outcomes for our patients.
All primary care providers see patients day after day who have obesity or who are overweight and who have prediabetes, and it's not something that you can address in a 5-minute end of visit discussion or with a pamphlet. And to have the diabetes prevention program available as something bigger that you can give them that's clinically proven and available nationwide.
So, yes, I know she said 41%, but that was when we filmed that video. They've done very much. They've done much better. And then we did launch in March. We launched this with the CDC, so all the tools and resources that we have are available free. It is a single sign-on, which is really a pain. But every piece of the toolkit is available. You don't have to download the whole thing. So you can go and visit that. And if you are with a community organization, anybody can be a diabetes prevention program provider. CDC has a website, shows you how to be trained as a lifestyle coach. We need more in the community. We need more diverse programs in the community. I work with the AMA Foundation, and we actually did just fund last year 8 free and charitable clinics to become DPP providers, and we're about to fund another 8. So we really do need to spread this, and even through the faith community. So thank you. I apologize for going over. And once we certainly get physicians more understanding about prediabetes, then we can get them to be champions for our SSB policy changes. Thank you.